live from the Metal Mayhem Studios in Rochester, New York.
We are gold.
And heard around the world by metalheads just like you. This is Metal Mayhem ROC.
Heavy metal music.
Your weekly dose of metal music, interviews, album reviews, news, and more. Want to be part of the show? Send us a message through our website, metalmayhemroc.com, or hit us up on Facebook and Twitter. Search Metal Mayhem ROC.
It's getting nice and heavy.
Now, welcome our hosts, John the Vernomatic Verno and Metal Forever Mark.
It is getting nice and heavy. Welcome to another edition of Metal Mayhem ROC. I'm your host, John the Vernomatic Verno, and tonight we have a special guest as Carl Kennedy, drummer of the power trio band from Central New York, The Rods, catches up with us, shares what's going on with his new side band, The Kennedy Band, next week, August 15th, releasing the full-length Warrior album. Carl will discuss how the band came about, who he's playing with, what type of music they're doing, and he'll share the Rods' ties to Rochester, New York. It goes back to the mid-80s, that whole Barrett Alley Music America connection. He'll also share tidbits about touring with Iron Maiden and Priest in the early 80s on some of those early Screaming for Vengeance, Number of the Beast tours. He shares his Mount Rushmore metal vocalists, and also dives into a metal confession that I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag, but it's pretty wild. That and more. Metal Forever Mark isn't with us this week. He's on assignment, so I'm just handling all duties tonight. Remember, folks, join us over at the Metal Mayhem ROC group page. We have daily topics. We discuss things, get the interaction thing going, and we also encourage people to send us emails to eventually be guests on the show, submitting your own Mount Rushmore of metal entries, your metal confessions, anything like that. So, gonna do a little spot from our show sponsor, and then we'll kick right into the Carl Kennedy of the Rods solo band interview. Talk to you next week, and remember, 8 p.m. Thursday nights, new content, new shows drop every week. See you on Facebook. Thanks, folks.
This edition of Metal Mayhem ROC is brought to you by Mr. V's Street Style Vending and Special Events Catering. Visit our lunch cart in the College Town District at Strong Memorial Hospital, or hit up the late night weekend location at the corner of Monroe Avenue and South Goodman. Look us up at mrvsvending.com for catering, pricing, and availability. That's Mr. V's Street Style Vending and Special Events Catering. Now, back to Metal Mayhem ROC.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Metal Mayhem ROC. I'm your host, John the Vernomatic Verno, and tonight we have Rod's drummer, founder, and solo artist, Carl Kennedy, with us. Carl, how are you?
I'm doing great, John. Thanks for checking in with me. I appreciate it.
Of course, of course. We got to keep everyone up to speed on what's going on in the Central New York metal scene. So we have a new solo album coming out. Why don't you get us up to speed on what you've been up to?
Well, I mean, for this album, I play in an 8-piece horn band, and the bass player Tony from Kennedy, who also sings on the album, he and I are in this band, and he had a band called TLC with the other members of Kennedy. And I've been looking for musicians, you know, in this area. And although I've played with musicians in this area, and I've worked with them one-off, a song here or there we've recorded, I never found anybody like-minded to do a whole album with. So, you know, Tony asked me, his drummer wasn't working out because he had a job commitment, and so they were doing a TV show. And he asked me if I would be willing to fill in on the TV show. So I learned some songs from TLC and did the TV show. That was fun. And so we decided to start writing material together. And so we started doing that at the recording studio one day a week. And so, you know, after about a year and a half, we wound up having had a lot of fun. We found that we had an album of material we were proud of. And in the process of playing together every week, we became a band. So it was as simple as that. And I hate all the, you know, cliches, like it was so organic, man, but this whole Kennedy project, and it's not a solo album per se, it's a band, mm-hmm. but this whole thing has been kind of a Forrest Gump thing. We just didn't plan anything. There was no, you know, there's no manifest. There was no anything that was going on that was preconceived. We just started writing. Then we thought we had an album. We put the album together.
This is the new version. How does this lineup differ from the 2016 album?
That was a solo album. And, you know, I asked my friends to perform, you know, and that was about my songwriting is why I did that album. I figured anybody who knew me knew I could play drums. But not everybody knew that, and people knew me as a producer. Not everybody knew me as a songwriter. That was a hell job. You know, the artist that I worked with, was a prick. He was a jackass to work with. I'll tell you, he was all over the map. One day he was euphoric. The next day he was depressed. This album sucks. I'll never release it. The next day I was like, oh, this is really good. I think I'll release it. And then the next day, oh, I can't play drums to this song. I've done it 10 times. I don't know the feel. It was a nightmare. I mean, Rob Reiner from Anvil, I was talking to him one night saying, you know, I love this song. I've written My Life My Way about my two of my close friends who passed away. And I really want to make this song great. And I just couldn't play the drum track. I was just so insecure and unsure of myself. And Rob gave me the pep talk and the producer pep talk. And so I went and was able to knock the track out. But it was really about my songwriting. And I wanted it to be songs that I had written 100% of across the board, all the riffs, the guitar parts, the bass parts, melody, lyrics, etc. That'll be out soon. It's a killer album. Mm-hmm. But, you know, friends like that, like Mark Tornillo from Accept, he actually came to my house twice in my little studio. Very, very kind. I mean, you're talking about very supportive friends.
Mark goes back to the TT Quick days. So you guys have been buddies for 30 plus years.
And Joe Camus, who's, you know, no stranger to Rochester. Joe sang a couple of songs, helped me out. He's such a great guy. You know, so Chris Caffrey played solos. John Hahn did the majority of the work. But, you know, I had so many friends. Even Gary Chesick from the Jeffrey James Band, the guitarist, helped me a lot with working out, fine-tuning some arrangements and things, and he plays on it. So it was just really a great thing that my friends, you know, played on the album.
Mark goes back to the TT Quick days. So you guys have been buddies for 30 plus years.
And Joe Camus, who's, you know, no stranger to Rochester. Joe sang a couple of songs, helped me out. He's such a great guy. You know, so Chris Caffrey played solos. John Hahn did the majority of the work. But, you know, I had so many friends. Even Gary Chesick from the Jeffrey James Band, the guitarist, helped me a lot with working out, fine-tuning some arrangements and things, and he plays on it. So it was just really a great thing that my friends, you know, played on the album. So the Kennedy album was done and I was shopping labels. So we started working with the publicist, Chip from Chipster PR, and asking Chip, like, what do you think? Like, look, was this crazy time? Like, we're a new band. What should we do? And he said, well, you know, some of the press people are getting back to me who normally don't get back to me that quickly. So I said, you know what, let's just release the album. We all decided, talked about it, and we decided that, you know what, let's just do it. And so we released it digitally. And of course, we had decided to release it through Sleazy Rider, the physical, the vinyl and the CD. But we thought we'll go digital and we'll just put it out and we'll let the fans check it out and we'll see what kind of reviews we get and see if we can make some noise since we're sitting here doing nothing anyway.
Yeah, well, you know, I've had a chance to listen to it a few times, and it sounds modern, but yet you're not really reinventing the wheel here, and it just has that straight-to-your-face kind of approach. The single, the Warrior single, you know, gets right to it. But, you know, like Sign, the song In the Sign, that was a standout one. The second half of the album,
love that song, too.
That I was really digging, you know, Out for Blood, and what's the pronunciation on the last one?
Atia.
Yeah.
We call it Atia. That's what they were calling it, Atia. I think it's the correct pronunciation is Atia. But, you know, however you want to say it, John's fine with me because I don't really know. We'll be right back.
We're talking with Carl Kennedy, drummer, founder of the new band Kennedy, and he was for years one of the founding members of the Rods. And speaking of the Rods, 1983 in the Raw. Rumor has it was recorded up on Barrett's Alley. Is this true?
Absolutely. And so was Let Them Eat Metal. Both of those albums were recorded. And I'm trying to think what other song, what other albums, let me think. But Chris Bubach, when the Rods first started, that's our tie to that studio. When we first started, Chris Bubach was at Fredonia. And Chris was in the engineering program. So Chris had free studio time. And of course, as an engineering student, you need to record something. That's your gig, right? So we wound up making a deal with the school and to donate a piece of equipment that they wanted. I think it was a delay line, like $1,200 or something. It was nothing when I look back on it, but it was a big deal for us because we were starting musicians. But every time between every gig, we would go to the studio to record and we'd hang out for a day until Chris had time. Sometimes it was at night, but we would record. So we recorded with Chris that first Rods album, and that's how we did it. I have one diary where we literally went 62 days straight without a break, and every day off between gigs was driving to Fredonia to record. We literally weren't home for 62 days. We were diehards, and you know, that was the way it was. But then Chris Bubach got a job, graduated, and wound up getting a job engineering at Barrett Alley. So there we go. We went back to work with Chris again, and that's how.
So he went. He went to Music America, and Curcio hire him to work.
He did. That's right, Paul Curcio.
So Curcio had Music America in Rochester, and like I mentioned, we did the whole Lakeshore Record Exchange three-parter, and Ron and Jackie Stein. I don't know if you remember Ron and Jackie, but they were instrumental in the whole Rochester early mid '80s metal scene. And when the guys came up to do the Kill 'Em All, Metallica came up to do Kill 'Em All, and he was telling the story of Curcio reached out to him saying, hey, I got this band coming in here. How do you remember, what do you know about why Metallica came here? I did read the Johnny Z book, and there's a whole process, but why Curcio, why Rochester? Was it the fact that he was able to get up here on a financial deal or the studio, or what was it?
Well, I'm good friends with John and Marcia, and I would hate to ever speak for him, but
no.
I know that at that time, I was talking to Johnny Z at the time. So whether or not from the studio about producing bands. And so I don't know whether he struck a deal with Curcio or Curcio, which came first. Curcio or Metallica and Curcio. But it was, and because Chris was there also, so he knew Chris, and Chris had worked with Manowar. So, you know, that's like the music business is so incestuous that, you know, there's always that, the Kevin Bacon 3 degrees of separation somehow. So I think that's somehow that was it. But I remember Chris, and we called him Dr. Metal because Chris hated metal. It wasn't his favorite genre. He was more of a Chicago, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Spyro Gyra, that kind of a jazz-oriented thing, like real musicians, and which I always joke about that, they're real musicians. And Chris called me one day, and he was telling me, he goes, you know, like Lars struggles to play his fills, but he has great ideas. He has a hard time executing them. But he said, there's something about this band, and I always remember that because Chris, first of all, he recorded the Rods, and I never heard him say, oh, there's something about you guys. So I knew right away there was something special about Metallica.
But besides playing, you give us a quick rundown to Anthrax stuff you did, the Anthrax guys, some of the Exciter. I remember Exciter, the Violence and Force. They're a great, great band.
They are a great band, and they're great guys. That's the other thing. They're just a great band. They're actually great people. I loved working with Exciter. But, I did the first three Anthrax records and, in the middle of after the first album, they parted ways with Neil Turbin and they brought in a singer. And, you know, I always feel badly kind of saying this, but Matt, I just read an article about with Matt where he kind of admits that maybe he was a little bit cocky when he was young. So when he came in, he just wasn't the guy. And after a week of working with him, I just said, guys, this guy isn't going to get you to a major label. Because remember, Johnny Z was independent. He was trying to get his acts to major labels.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they said, we'll get Johnny on the phone. And I went to the conference room, called Johnny, told him what was up. Johnny said, let me talk to the guys. The guys went in and talked to Johnny and came back in 5 minutes. And they said, John wants to talk to you. I go in. I said, hey, John, what's up? Put him on a bus and he hung up. And that was it. So then fortunately, through Duck McDonald, who he and I did the Thrasher album, and Duck and I have been friends for a long, long time. And he was great with Blue Cheer resurrecting the band in their later years. Duck suggested I call Joey Belladonna. And so Joey came in, and, you know, he was the perfect fit. He was actually just his voice and their music somehow had a unique thing. And for me to this day, as much as John Bush was great, I just think that Joey's for me is the identity of Anthrax.
Oh, I agree. The Neil Turbin era, you know, is just right at the beginning there in their infant stages. And you're right. John Bush, you know, the Stomp 442 and a couple of those other albums, he did a great job, but Joey is the voice of Anthrax. And then the stuff they've been doing the last couple albums, we had a chance to see him a year or two ago up here in Rochester, met him at the House of Guitars. And it's still, you know, killer stuff.
Still killer. And Joey sounds great.
And you're involved with Overkill, the Feel the Fire, the very first one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's another band, like clockwork. Every 2 years, him and Dee Dee get a few new guys in, put every 2 years pumping.
No, those guys are, he and Dee Dee have been amazing. They have been just cranking it out high level all this time. Nothing but respect for those guys. I got to see Blitz, I guess 2 years ago, because I was guesting for Held Hostage, and we opened for Metal Allegiance, direct support for Metal Allegiance. And so Blitz was part of that particular show. So we're both he's on the phone and I'm walking down the steps. We both looked at each other, gave me a big hug, and you know, it was great to see him.
Yeah. That's funny. Cause I met him years ago at the arcade, and then last spring, and he just celebrated his 60th birthday, and he goes, how things have changed now, you know, we go out to dinner. But catch us up on what's going on with the Rods.
We have a new singer who actually is the singer for Kennedy. Mike Santosiero is the singer for the Rods. And, you know, Gary and Freddie Villano from Quiet Riot and Dee Snider. And Freddie and I and David has an album out that will be coming out, called Hail and Farewell, which is an incredible tribute to Ronnie, you know, his cousin. And mm-hmm. It's a great album. And I played drums on that, along with, I think Nate Horton played one track and I played the rest, but it's a great, great album. And Freddie Villano played on that, but Freddie and I played a couple dates with Held Hostage together. We played on that album, David's album. We played on other tracks. We did a track for Jim Crean and on his London Fog album. And so he and I have worked together, you know, one form or another on different projects, but we fit together perfectly. And for David, this is our 40th year together. So this is we celebrated 40 years together, and it's unbelievable. It's hard to think that it was 40 years ago we got together and actually started writing songs for the Rods. So here we are 40 years later talking about it. But we decided with Gary's departure that David and I we've had singers. We've had Shmulik Avigal in the band, and we've had Rick Caudle in the band. And so for us, it was time to say, let's just bring in a singer, and, you know, let's make this change. And we may even add a keyboard player.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I know a lot of the old Rods fans are here. They go, David's not going to sing. No, David and Mike will be training vocals. You know, for David, it allows him to concentrate more on his guitar playing, and he's playing better than ever. But it's he'll still be singing, and as we always call him, the Right Reverend Rock. Who, you know, he talks to the crowd. He's like, he's like a Baptist minister. He's got the crowd fired up, and you know, he's a Bible thumping guy. In his case, he's a metal guitar god, pumping that metal guitar, pounding his fist on it, and preaching to the metal fans. So that won't change. That's, you know, so it's not like things will get too crazy or too different for the Rods. It'll still be the same catalog. We'll have some new material, and we'll have a singer, which is going to offer us a little more flexibility in songwriting.
Well, what's your famous quote about the Rods?
If it's more than the three chords, it takes longer than 5 minutes to learn, it's not a good Rod song. And now, and now, John, maybe we can make it four chords and 10 minutes.
Well, hey, you know, it's never too late to learn. So
that's right. The old dogs, you know, the old wild dogs maybe can learn a trick.
Well, this will give me a new trick. Great chance to segue into a segment we call Mount Rushmore of Metal. And the question to you today, Mr. Kennedy, is your top four Rushmore vocalists of metal of all time.
Ronnie Dio, number one. That's not even no question about that. The other is really tough because, you know, there are people like Bruce Dickinson, you know, amazing singer. And kind of created that genre, really, to some extent. So, you know, I love him. I mean, there's singers like we mentioned Neil Turbin. Neil Turbin's a great metal singer, mm-hmm. but whatever happened after Anthrax, where he basically became a pariah, didn't get the opportunities to have more high profile gigs, but he was brilliant. I think Joey is one of the top metal guys, I would say. Rob Halford, of course.
Yeah, the metal god, the metal god.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to be there. Like when Priest fired him, whatever that whole debacle was, it was like, what? Like, it's, you know, and I love, and, you know, we did 30-some dates with Ripper as one of the singers for the Dio Disciples tour we did. And Ripper's great. And so no diss to Ripper because he's phenomenal. But Halford was Priest. As simple as that.
You ever share a stage with a Priest, open up and support or anything?
We have, yeah. And for the Screaming for Vengeance, we did a part of that tour for them, you know, through the Midwest and through Texas and that. And we had actually, our first show was when we were looking to get a manager. We played at the Palace Theater, I believe, in Albany, New York. And it was really cool because it was our first show. Cedric Kushner was the promoter, and Cedric Kushner was he had been promoting bands, but he was getting into boxing. So he was kind of like on the cusp of that, but he was looking at us to manage us. And so he put us on the bill to open. And it was a great opportunity. And I always remember that we were living on $5 a day, and you know, we had $5 a day, and we were, our bass player, Steve, he had to buy cigarettes out of that. So, I mean, we were starving, and he had to buy cigarettes on top of it. So it was, you know, we get to the room, the dressing room, and there's this food laid out, you know, and I'm like, oh, we can't touch that. It looks great. I'm so hungry. And you know, and it was really nice stuff, John, like bologna. There was an olive loaf, slices of orange and white American cheese, and so there was some white bread there. We're like, wow, freaking Priest, man, look at what they get. You guys like eat like kings.
And that was their heyday. That was the Screaming for Vengeance. That's when they were.
No, that was earlier, but that was our deli tray. We thought it was for Priest, you know. We're like, oh my god, these guys eat so well, like bologna and pimento loaf. But it was our tray. They came in and said, no, this food's for you. But we were afraid to touch it because, you know, we figured. And then we realized that Priest had some kind of like barbecue chicken and steak and shrimp and lobster in their dressing room. We were like thinking they were eating olive loaf. But anyway, there was a window above where you could look out in the Palace Theater, like down from the dressing room onto the side stage. So it was kind of cool to watch the show from there. Seeing him ride out on the motorcycle and the whole machine gun and the whole bit he was doing then.
It was great.
But the Screaming for Vengeance tour was really fantastic for us. And that was a lot of fun, and it was all arenas and the huge set they had. They had two sets. One set actually had to, one set went ahead the day before to be built while they were performing that night. And then that set, they finished that night, would then jump to the next venue for 2 days later. So it was a huge production they had. But it was fun. We watched them every night. I became good friends with the drummer. And, you know, it was just a fun tour. The guys were all nice to us.
Well, that being said, 40 years in the metal world and rock and roll, you have to have a metal confession you could share with us.
I have so many metal confessions that we could restart this interview. And it could be all metal confessions. I think you'd have to give me a little more direction about the metal confession. Like, what would I be confessing about?
Well, you know what? Why don't we share any interaction or your impression of the late, great Randy Rhoads?
Well, when we played the first show we opened for Ozzy with Randy Rhoads, that was in the dressing room in Syracuse, and we were in the dressing room warming up, and Randy was several doors down, like way down the hallway from us. And all of a sudden he fires up practicing, warming up. He must have had a full Marshall stack in there because literally we could not speak to each other. Our mouths would move. We couldn't hear a word we were saying. It was that loud. But at the time, you know, the Blizzard of Oz album, he was now playing things that, you know, later we would hear Satriani play, and, you know, it was a whole different style of music, all the modes and just wailing and the sweet picking and things he didn't play with Ozzy, things that were, you know, way ahead of what he was doing.
Sure.
But he was playing it, and so we always think about, like, what would have happened if he continued to record. Like, what would have made some amazing, amazing music, because he played with such feel and that he had amazing technique. So if you can, as a songwriter, if you have that kind of technique and also you're playing with feel and you can write, it's wide open for you. So, but it was amazing to hear that. We were just kind of all in awe, not only at what he was playing, the fact that the guy was playing a freaking 120 decibels in his dressing room.
That's the thing. Well, that's great. That's good stuff. But listen, Carl, I want to thank you for sharing your post-dinner cocktail with me. And I want to thank you for 40 years of rocking out. It's sometimes, I don't know if you realize it, but you do make you have made an impression on a lot of people. And it's always nice to talk with people that I grew up with. And we will do our part on Metal Mayhem ROC to promote the new Kennedy project. Again, the new physical copy comes out everywhere, hopefully, August 15th. And any dates, possibly after COVID?
No, we do have a date lined up, and that's in October. And, you know, we're excited. I mean, we're tentative about it because who knows? October 3rd. So we're hoping that date's going to hold. And by the way, I wanted to mention that I'm part of this musical collective called Angels of Dresden, and we're just releasing a video of a song, Home for a While. I always want to say it's a different title, but it's Home for a While. And Brad Sinsel, Bryn Ahrens, a lot of talented people, and I'm playing drums. But check it out if you get a chance. It's a cool song, Angels of Dresden.
Yeah, and people out there listening, all this information will be on the Metal Mayhem ROC website show notes, so there'll be direct links to everything that Carl and I have talked about tonight. But Twitter, got a Twitter handle, where can people follow you?
The Rhoads Official.
Okay.
And Carl Kennedy, so on Instagram, Twitter, and of course Facebook, Carl Kennedy, or the Rhoads Official and Kennedy on Facebook. So lots of places to find us. And John, thank you, because with this whole COVID shutdown, this is the only way the music gets out. And as I mentioned earlier, Kennedy is a new band. And so we need to get the word out. Like we're talking about, it's hard to rise above the din and get people to take notice. And so this is one of the ways which we can do it as a band. So we thank you very much for that.
Oh, you're welcome. And like I said at the beginning of the interview, I do dabble. My partner, Metal Forever Mark, that I do the show with, we have done some promoting up here. We brought Dokken into town a couple times, the last in line. And, you know, we had an involvement with the Overkill guys in terms of promotion. So we were ready to do another one, and then COVID started. So, you know, let the virus do it, take its course, and maybe we'll work together in the future. But you're Let's welcome. Hope. You're welcome. Well, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you.
Okay. We'll talk to you soon, Carl. Take care, bud.
Take care, John.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, there you have Carl Kennedy, founding member of the Rods, the new outfit, Kennedy, the album Warrior, coming out. The digital is out now, and the hard copy is August 15th. So for Metal Mayhem ROC, this is the Vernomatic, and we will talk to you next Thursday night. Take care.
Metal for life.
Thanks for listening to Metal Mayhem ROC. Check out our websites at metalmayhemroc.com and metalforever.com for information on upcoming concerts, podcasts, archives, and all sorts of info. Please like, follow, and share with everyone, even your non-metal friends. Catch us next time on WLFE-DB Radio.